Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be.
Listen anywhere.
Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
No, he didn't slam you, he didn't bump you, he didn't nudge you, he rubbed you. And rubbing, son, is racing.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
This is Pit Pass USA, the fastest auto racing location on the internet, with the latest news, the best interviews, and our own brand of commentary. Here's your host, Larry Henry.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Pit Pass USA. Glad to have you on board for this Wednesday evening. We had a great, and I want to use the word great again, weekend in Baltimore for the inaugural Baltimore Grand Prix. Beautiful venue, the Inner Harbor, was just unbelievable. You have to see it to believe it, with the restaurants and the water and their amphitheater, and was just outstanding. The crowds were unbelievable and huge, to say the least. And it was just a great weekend. So I want to thank all of my new friends in Baltimore for having us there this past weekend. It was awesome. Meanwhile, of course, we've had a lot of other things going on. NASCAR postponing until just yesterday down at Atlanta, with Jeff Gordon getting the win. We had IndyCar, of course, running with us. We were going to have Will Power on the show tonight, but unfortunately, he had some plane problems and wound up being delayed, and he's here, there, and yon. So we're going to talk to Will next week. But we will talk a little bit later on with Stephen Kane, who was the winner in the Baltimore Grand Prix with the American Le Mans Series. First-time winner. In fact, didn't start racing in the series until Lime Rock, the third race of the season, along with Humaid Al-Masoud. We will talk to him. We'll talk to Timothy Peters from the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. He's right there in the third spot as they head towards Chicago in just over a week for their final eight races of the season. But first, I wanted to talk a little bit just about racing in general. I'm pleased to welcome to the program a gentleman I've known for a long, long time. I've worked with him. We've been in the kart series in the past. Good friends. He still writes for the Arizona Republic. You'll also see his articles, The Drags, Dollars, and Cents, at CompetitionPlus.com, and read his weekly blog at SpinDoctor500blog.blogspot.com, and that is Michael Knight. Michael, welcome and thanks.
Hi, Larry. Always great to talk to you.
Well, let's talk a little bit about racing, and it goes back to really your blog, where you take a look without all the nonsense in the racing world. And how do you see the racing world right now? Just an overall picture of it with NASCAR and IndyCar, Grand-Am, American Le Mans Series. Is it a healthy industry?
It's kind of a hanging-on industry, Larry. If you look at it in the context of the stock market, and let's face it, just about everybody one way or the other has to pay attention to the stock market on almost a daily basis, because it's more volatile than nitro fuel and drag racing, I think. I look at racing more in terms of the business and the politics of what's going on, even more than the actual on-track competition, because the truth of the matter is, as much as we all enjoy the racing and who wins and who makes what pass and what kind of exciting new car is out there or whatever, the business side of it, it's the sponsorship dollars that provide the real fuel. It's the people who can still manage to buy tickets in a tough economy, support the sponsors' products and services, and certainly the behind-the-scenes politics that sort of create the rules, create the environment in which the competitors work and the fans have to observe. Those are the things that I'm really focused on a weekly basis, mainly in my blog.
Well, you mentioned sponsors, and I think it's quite interesting when you look at NASCAR now. Even the top names, we just had it with Roush Fenway. They're looking for sponsorship dollars for 2012. And, you know, they've got some of the biggest names in the sports with Carl Edwards, Greg Biffle, and Matt Kenseth, and yet they're struggling and having to piece, okay, four or five races here, four or five races there with their drivers.
Larry, that's a perfect example, and I think, you know, if you look at virtually, when you would consider the universe of top teams throughout all of racing, Roush Fenway is really just an incredible example of the challenges of the economic environment right now as it pertains to racing. You look at the quality of the team, the success, the marketability of the drivers. You see, you know, Crown Royal is leaving, so Matt Kenseth's car is essentially unsponsored right now. You have UPS cutting back their involvement quite a bit, mainly in favor of college football. And this is, let me just say, Larry, you know, I always tell race fans, and I appreciate being on your show, and I appreciate all the opportunities that I have to talk with race fans. And as I always say, you cannot be a good race fan or a knowledgeable race fan these days without knowing something about the business of racing. And, you know, for anyone who has any interest at all in this, I mean, I hear this question frequently. I'm sure you get it once in a while. People say, how do I get a sponsor? Well, one of the things you do, I certainly do on a daily basis, is follow the business developments, the sports marketing developments in other types of sports. And here you have UPS has went out through IMG and cut this $100 million deal, and they get an association with one buy through with more than 60 college football programs, including your favorite, the University of Michigan. From a business standpoint, it was a spectacular buy, very innovative, and you can just see where that in a lot of ways is, despite how we all feel about racing, where that would be a really attractive buy for them, and some of those dollars are going to go away from NASCAR, and in this case, Roush Fenway. And even Carl Edwards, we see Aflac, their status is really not determined. Fastenal's Carl Edwards' major sponsor for a lot of the races next year. But, you know, but bottom line to this, Larry, is that these kind of issues permeate throughout racing. Roush Fenway is certainly very much an in-the-spotlight example right now, but just I'll take it over to IndyCar racing for just a moment. I can tell you, having been there, that in the days leading up to the Indianapolis 500 last May, there were two major topics of conversation in the garage area. One was how the double wide restart rule was going to work, and that obviously got a lot of pre-race media attention. The other story, which did not get much attention, if any at all, were team owners and team managers and sponsor managers all saying, how are we going to pay for new cars and new engines in 2012? And I can tell you, there was a tremendous amount of conversation about that in the days leading up to Indy, and it just all gets back to the economics of the nation that we're in right now, the worldwide economic environment, and how this translates to the business of racing, not only in terms of sponsorship, but also people having the ability to go out and buy tickets to actually attend the races.
Well, Michael, you brought up the IndyCar, and I know sitting down and talking with Roger Penske in the month of May in the garage, I brought up, there's plenty of cars in the garage this year, but these cars were going to be show cars, so you might as well run them in Indianapolis. You've got new cars coming in. And he said, I expect a lower car count next year because of the dollars. Already we've seen the owners, and they're the ones that put their foot down about the different body styles, is that we can't afford it. We're going to go with one. We cannot buy new cars and do all these aero kits at the same time. We just don't have the money.
That's exactly right, Larry. And, you know, the fans need to understand that basically the equipment that they see out on the track this year is all obsoleted. And let me just say, I agree that a new car was needed. I think, you know, this current Dallara, this formula is very long in the tooth. I think it's time for something new for a lot of different reasons. But it comes at a very difficult time from the economic environment, because people have to understand it's not just buying new cars, but buying all new parts. the development, the simulations to improve upon the basic pieces that'll be provided by Dallara. You have the new engine programs with Honda and Chevrolet, and whether Lotus is going to show up. I mean, you know, flip a coin on that one. Because of the renegotiation of Firestone's contract with IndyCar, the owner's tire bill next year is almost going to double. And there's just not the sponsorship base there to really cover everybody in terms of these costs. And that's what led to the owners voting, I think, almost unanimously that they wanted to put off these new aero or bodywork kits for next year. And that, of course, is what was going to provide the visual distinction, which has been talked about so much as being desirable within IndyCar. So, you know, next year there'll be at least new engines from Honda and Chevrolet, and I guess that'll be something to talk about. But, you know, all the cars are going to look the same again. And, you know, depending on what the economic environment is, supposedly the bodywork differentiation may happen in 2013. But, you know, then again, maybe it won't. And I would say use that as an example. Again, it's an economic decision, but there is a danger, I think, especially in such a fragile economic environment, of racing series executives over promising to the fans what's going to happen. I think we've seen some of that in IndyCar racing this year in terms of the $5 million challenge at Las Vegas, in terms of new bodywork kits for next year, some other things, and certainly we've seen it in some other series as well. And I would just say, again, you know, one of the key things that racing fans should pay attention to and have an awareness of in the economy is something called consumer confidence. And that's a monthly analysis. University of Michigan is involved in that data analysis. And, you know, the consumer confidence level is ultimately what determines how much people are willing to go out and spend. If they feel comfortable about their own economic situation, they're more willing or more likely to go out and actually buy race tickets or, you know, use their discretionary income in perhaps some ways to support racing. And consumer confidence is an extreme low right now. And I think just when you're dealing with that kind of psychology within your fan base, if you say you're going to do something, I think you better do it, because you really can't afford to dispirit or discourage what is already a fragile fan base. And I think everyone involved in all kinds of racing, that's something that they should be extremely sensitive to.
I'm talking with Michael Knight from the Arizona Republic, also writes for CompetitionPlus.com, and you can read his weekly blog at SpinDoctor500blog.blogspot.com. And Michael, on the subject of IndyCar, this past weekend I was in Baltimore for the inaugural Baltimore Grand Prix. We got started late on Friday. They were still putting the track together. The fans were out on Friday. Huge numbers. It didn't matter to them. Saturday with the American Le Mans Series, who I work for, the place was packed. The fans were on their streets. Sunday, the same thing. But doesn't it come down, even though it's well attended, the TV numbers for a sponsor, that someone, the eyes on TV are what they're really selling, what they wanted. Okay, you might have 40, 50,000 in the stands. The sponsors want those other eyeballs.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, again, I you have the advantage on me, Larry. You were there in Baltimore. I caught bits of it on television. Certainly, it from a fan involvement, a public support involvement, it looked good. I noticed that some of the internet chat rooms are all excited because the number, the audience number on Versus was up from what a race last year on the same weekend, but a race that was at Kentucky Speedway as opposed to Baltimore. So it really, it's not a valid comparison whatsoever. But again, I think what fans have to understand is, yes, it's very important to have good at-track attendance, not just for the promoter's benefit or the series benefit, but there is that psychological benefit. You know, does it look like people are actually interested in the sport or not? You know, we live in a very visual society. As you know, we live in a photo op society, and it makes a big difference just in terms of the psychology of the business of racing, whether the fan, the stands are full or close to full or not. And it's an especially critical time for that right now. You have NASCAR's chase for the Sprint Cup starting. You have NHRA's full throttle countdown starting. You have the IndyCar Championship and some other series wrapping up. And even with the competition that starts this weekend with the NFL, I can tell you from a sponsorship decision-making standpoint, there are corporations who want to see how racing stands up versus the competition from the NFL and from major college football. And NASCAR's had a decent bounce in their TV numbers this year. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. The season got off to a fantastic start with Dale Earnhardt Jr. on the pole at Daytona, this improbable win by the Wood brothers and Trevor Bayne in the Daytona 500. I think that gave the whole series a big shot in the arm. Trevor Bayne handled it fantastically. And then you had the second race of the year out here at Phoenix. Jeff Gordon comes out, wins after a long drought, and obviously he's going on the three wins now this season. So NASCAR got off to a good start. It's kind of held up. But now, you know, we got to see if that momentum, that positive numbers in terms of the TV audience, holds up or is eroded once this all-important chase period begins. Because, again, as you were talking a few minutes ago about Roush Fenway Racing, looking for sponsors for next year for high-profile drivers. There are corporations who are studying this and, you know, looking and see, can racing, can NASCAR, NHRA, et cetera, maintain a decent television viewership level and certainly at-track attendance when their competition is major college football and the NFL? It's a very, very important time of the year from the business aspects of major auto racing.
Michael, my final question goes back to somewhat IndyCar, and that is, of course, you were at the press conference when the big secret announcement that Danica Patrick was headed to NASCAR. That's kind of interesting, and I find it laughable that everyone thinks she's going to save Nationwide and the TV ratings will be up all year long. And secondly, conversely, on the IndyCar side, it suddenly seems that they're trying to make Dan Weldon the face of IndyCar, possibly to replace her. He seems to be everywhere, testing cars, doing this, doing that. What's your take on all that?
Well, from the Danica standpoint, as you say, I covered her news conference the other week. Obviously, there was no real news there. This is a big expectations game. I mean, think about it this way. She's paired with Dale Earnhardt Jr. By most metrics, they would be considered the two most popular drivers in America. Neither one of them have won a race since 2008. So obviously, you're going to have media partners who look at Danica really, again, from a business standpoint in terms of driving their own ratings to buy their newspaper or magazines. And so there's going to be a whole new wave of Danica hype going into Daytona next year as she starts the full Nationwide season, and then certainly as she transitions into Cup. Is she the silver bullet for Nationwide? Absolutely not. And again, I think, ultimately, can she win a race? I think she could win a race on a restrictor plate track. I think she almost showed that at the Daytona in July. But, you know, if she's running around consistently out of the top, 10, 15, 20 or whatever, I think that's going to wear off pretty quickly in terms of whatever short-term bounce she provides. In terms of IndyCar, I mean, other than Trevor Bayne winning at Daytona, certainly Dan Weldon for Brian Herta's small team winning the Indianapolis 500 was a huge story. But, I mean, to cast Dan as the new quote-unquote face of IndyCar, I mean, it defies really sports marketing logic. Does he have his place there to help push IndyCar along? Sure he does, but is it more than Dario Franchitti, for example? I would certainly not think so. Is it more than Graham Rahal or Marco Andretti? No, I wouldn't think so. So I think, for the time being, there is going to be no quote face, unquote face of IndyCar racing. It's going to really need to be more a collective promotion. Because let's face it, I mean, I'll just very quickly, Larry, there was all this nonsense that came from Randy Bernard this year about going to have a race in Phoenix next year. I talked to Randy about it at Indianapolis, and he never had a conversation either in person by phone or in writing with Brian Sperber, who's who's the president of Phoenix International Raceway. And I said to him, Randy, in all respect to you and your series, there is no public interest in those names because nobody knows who the drivers are in your series. There is no emotional connection. People have an emotional connection with Dale Jr., with Danica, with Jeff Gordon, with Tony Stewart, with Carl Edwards, and so forth and so on. There is no emotional connection. And when I say emotional connection, I mean the kind of thing that drives people to go buy a ticket, or if they can't do that, to watch it on TV. So that's really the challenge, is taking these names, Dan Weld and Dario Franchitti, et cetera, and building them to the point where, you know, more than just the internet chat room hardcore fan is willing to actually want to pay attention to them and spend their money to go watch them race.
Absolutely so. Well, Michael, as always, great insight from you. Again, I encourage everyone to read your weekly blog, spindoctor500blog.blogspot.com. Also, your articles that are at the Arizona Republic, and your drags, dollars and cents column at competitionplus.com. As always, very enjoyable talking to you, Michael, and try to stay cool out there in Phoenix now that it's finally getting under 100 degrees.
It's a great place to live, I can tell you that much. And good luck to your Detroit Tigers and then Michigan. And looks like we're going to have the Arizona Diamondbacks in the playoffs against another one of our friendly teams, the Phillies. So, again, I think, you know, if you follow the business of baseball or the business of golf or tennis or whatever, you can learn things that apply to the business of racing, and that's something certainly I try to do.
That is Michael Knight, and hopefully you found that interesting. It's not, fans always wonder, well, why aren't they doing this, and why isn't this going on? M-O-N-E-Y, it's the business side of things. You cannot run on the racetrack without money, and it doesn't just roll in because companies have to respond to shareholders. Very insightful stuff for Michael. Well, next up, we're going to turn our attention to a first-time winner in the American Le Mans Series. He and his teammate took home their Dyson Lola with Oryx on board to victory in Baltimore. We'll talk to Stephen Kane when we return to Pit Pass USA, part of the Power of Motorsports series at VoiceAmericaSports.com.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
When it comes to youth and high school football, listen each week to Coach Al Gross at First and Ten Football. Coach covers vital topics relating to the latest trend on a national level. Join Coach as he interviews personalities from the NFL, NCAA, and the top high school coaches from around the country. Catch all the interviews and get in-depth information online at www.firstandtenfootball.com. Your national resource for youth and high school football. First and Ten Football airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Sports.
What if there was a program that brought the best in sports and the best of entertainment together in one place? It can be done. And Darnell Autry proves it every week on Outside the Spotlight. In this program, athletes and artists come together to share their success stories, hobbies, professional projects, and more that will interest not only the sports fan, but fans of entertainment and other human interest stories. If you have something you want to ask your favorite athlete or entertainer, listen for Outside the Spotlight, Fridays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, on Voice America Sports.
The revolution has begun with Jim and Trav.
Listen this week as Randall Eden, Shannon Young, Josh Fleming, and Joe Hosmer tell us why it's important to get our kids in the outdoors. Plus, Cat Daddy will have some catfishing tips, and Nick Rhodes has a new twist on wildlife management you'll want to hear. This is sponsored by Ram Trucks at RamTrucks.com. Wednesdays at 1 Pacific on the Voice America Sports Channel. I'm Jim Ferguson. I'll see you on the trail.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. That's LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Now back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry.
This past weekend, it was the inaugural Grand Prix in Baltimore. Fantastic crowds and fantastic racing. And on Saturday, well, we had another first-time winner this year in the American Le Mans Series, and a tandem that really didn't come on board to the series to Lime Rock this year, but they've been running up front all season long since they joined Dyson Racing, and they got the win on Saturday. And I'm talking with Stephen Kane, who co-drove the car with Humaid Al-Masoud. Stephen, congratulations on the great drive in Baltimore.
Thanks very much, sir. It was great. It was great to be to win the first race in Baltimore. Obviously, you know, it's going to go down in history as we've won the first race. But you know, also just to win the first race in LMS is just fantastic. And, you know, it was, you know, I just couldn't get over the crowds. What was there? You know, Baltimore put on a fantastic race weekend, and you know, everything run really smoothly. You know, when the crowds turned out, and that was the most impressive thing about it. You know, all the fans turned up and supported us all, and you know, it'll be great if we can get back there in the future.
Well, and for you and Humaid, we talked about this early when you came on board at Lime Rock. Neither one of you had ever raced the American Le Mans Series. You didn't know the car. You didn't know any of the tracks. And, of course, going to Baltimore, no one knew the track. So for at least once this season, you were even Steven with everybody.
Yes, I would have said that myself personally, because I've raced in street circuits before. But for Humaid, Humaid has only been driving for 2 years, you know. He's a novice at the end of the day when it comes to circuits like this. And, you know, he's took everything in his stride. And, you know, to come to a circuit, a street course in his first ever time, it's just amazing to see that we've actually won and him get through the stints and learn the circuit and stay away from the walls. You know, and the fashion that he did was just great. You know, ultimately, I haven't been around the street circuit for a number of years. So the guys in America... and now LMS are always going to street circuits every year, so it's good to get round one at least 2 years. So, you know, to get there, I really enjoy it, and the whole team enjoyed it. So we really want to get back to another one, and hopefully we'll get back to Long Beach next year.
Well, when you talk about that, obviously you didn't run a Long Beach because the number 20 Oryx Dyson team wasn't in existence at the time at Long Beach back in April of this year. You mentioned Humaid had never run on street circuits before, and yet you only had a little over an hour of practice and qualifying before you went out to race. Yeah, you had the warm-up on Saturday morning, but not a lot of time to go out on the track. So it seems like both of you really adjusted quickly, and especially Humaid. And maybe we don't talk about him enough. We kind of focus on you. You seem to be running the car at the end and running strong. But he has done a fantastic job of never having been in these cars and having very little experience.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the thing with it all. He's not somebody that he's been driving for years, and he's slowly getting up the ladder. You know, this guy's only been driving for 2 years, if that. You know, and I took him under my wing, and, you know, I think both of us, and right down to the team members, you know, we've only been in America now for 5 races, and we're really taking it in our strides, and me and Humaid ourselves are very alike personally. You know, we like to take on and have open-minded about things, and, you know, at the minute, you know, apart from Mid-Ohio, me making a mistake, and Humaid making a small mistake at Road America, which ultimately you can do when you're learning, but, you know, every time you get in the car, it just seems to be working. And, you know, when it works and the car feels good and Dunlop are great, getting us great tires every weekend, you know, the boys are doing a great job with the engine and it's really reliable. You know, it just seems to be a cycle of, it's like a snowball. It gets bigger and better. And, you know, the more we drive, the more confidence we're getting and the more familiar we're getting with the people around us. And you know, it's, we're just really enjoying it, and when you're enjoying your sport, it ultimately it ends up it's going well, and we really just want to continue in that vein and build something for the future to have a proper crack at the championship at some point.
Well, I think you two both look like championship caliber. You've been strong since the start at Lime Rock. I think all of us thought maybe along the way you might pull off a win, but to do it in Baltimore, how shocking was it for you to be able to do that on the streets of Baltimore?
For me, yeah. You know, our aim at the start of the year when we talked about coming to do the series and, you know, when it eventually happened, our main aim was to sort of make sure that we finished on the lead lap. You know, I always had confidence in myself that I could perform at that level because I've performed in Europe at a high enough level in the past. And, you know, it was, you know, I've always watched American racing since I was a kid in TV, and I've always wanted the opportunity to come to America because the tracks are so famous, and, you know, it's just, you know, for me, winning in America was a lifelong dream, and to finally get it done and get it out of the way is just brilliant. Now we have to get on to the next one in Monterey at Mazda Speedway, and just, I just can't wait for that one because I've played it in the computer game so many times since a young age, and just I'm looking forward to getting there for the real thing.
Well, it should be fun. It is a great racetrack at Mazda Raceway at Laguna Seca. How did you and Homaid get together? Have you known each other for a while?
Well, yeah, it goes back a while. You know, we knew each other from the end of last year, and Junaid and Tom Maplethorpe, the team manager in RX Racing, he's an old friend of mine, and we've worked together in race teams previously. And, you know, Tom knew what I was about, and Tom's a very, he's a young, dynamic, you know, inspiring team manager, and he's really put this whole thing together. A lot of the credit goes to him. And, you know, he got me involved with Humaid and introduced us to each other. And, you know, we went to a few tests. We did the Dubai 24 Hours, and he convinced me that, you know, Humaid had potential, and to go over and see what he was like and see, you know, what I thought of him. And, you know, we went over, and we clicked straight away, and I could see something straight away that he had something, you know, that most drivers, that, you know, you don't meet many people who can just jump in their car the way he has done it and perform at the highest level. So, you know, it was great to get that, and we clicked, and, you know, our driving styles are very similar in the way we talk about the cars and relate to them back to the engineers, which is a real positive thing when you come to a series like the American Le Mans series, and you've got such short time to prepare the car and get the best setups that suits both drivers and suits the track. And, you know, I think it's all coming to the fore now where it's really starting to work. And it's a benefit, because that's why we can go into qualifying with a pretty good car and go into the races, and we're getting better throughout the weekend. So, you know, there's lots of positives between me and Humaid, and, you know, it's just great that we've got such a good chemistry. And, you know, I think it's like any sport, when you have a chemistry like we have in RX racing, it can take you a long way.
Absolutely. So, Stephen, very quickly, talk a little bit about your background, because you're completely unknown, I think, to most American sports car fans. But you've had an extensive background, beginning actually, I believe, with motocross and working your way through the ranks over in Europe.
Yeah. Motocross is always something I had from when I was a very young age. You know, I grew up on a farm, and, you know, the motorbike, anything with an engine in it, I was really enthusiastic about. So motorbikes were my first thing I got onto, and, you know, I always used to watch the Supercross over in America and TV back in the UK and Ireland, and, you know, that's one of the things that I wanted to do. And, you know, I did that for a number of years, right up until I was 19. So, you know, I left motocross quite late and started cars quite late, so I got so many injuries in motocross I had to stop. But I eventually ended up in go-karts for a year, and I won that championship in the first season. So, you know, one thing led to another. It was really luck how I ended up in cars. I always wanted to be in it, but, you know, the guys around karting introduced me to a guy called Andy Mackey in the Formula 4 Championship over in the UK, which is, at that time, was very competitive. And he honestly got me into the car and got me a drive, and we went and won the British Formula 4 Championship. And from that point, it really took off. I was voted McLaren Autosport Young Driver of the Year, and I raced Formula 3 in the UK, and won a series by Renault and tested in GP2, and then I eventually ended up in British Touring Cars. So it's been eventful sort of 10 years, but, you know, I've raced in a lot of things, and, you know, this is probably the best series I've ever raced in. So I'm really happy to be over in America, and I just hope it continues next year, and we can be still winning races and still up in front.
Stephen, we're glad to have you in America Racing. You have been great, great personality, great running on the racetrack, both you and Homaid, and I think great things are ahead, and it's going to be interesting to watch, especially when we get to Petit Le Mans, when all the big dogs are back with the Peugeots and the Audis and have the factory Aston Martins there too. That's going to be the real fun time, I think, for both you and Hamid with all that big field.
Yeah, that's definitely what we want them guys to be involved. But, it's going to be very difficult when you come up with the major manufacturers and their massive budgets. It can become very difficult, but, we just have to get our heads down and get down to business and make sure that we finish the race and try and come up with the best result we can. You know, this year's been very good because, I know there's only been a few cars on the grid. We're lacking a few cars, but the quality in the field is very, very high. You know, racing against Guy and Chris, who's been at the front in the championship for years now. And Lucas Lure and Graf himself is, you're not going to get many better competitors. So I think from our point of view, as performance-wise, it's very good. But when the big boys come out, like the Peugeot and the Audis, it will be really good fun, and we're really looking forward to it.
Well, Stephen, again, I want to congratulate you on the win. I think it was outstanding on Saturday. The fans loved everything they saw, which were great. And we're looking for more great things from you and Hamid all season long. And thanks for taking some time out for back over there in Ireland to talk with me today.
No problem at all. Just want to thank everyone who supported us in the series so far. Everyone's been so kind and so great. And hopefully we'll give them some more race wins to celebrate. So thanks very much again, and we'll see you in Monterey.
And indications are from Dyson Racing, just reading an article, that it looks like the 20 car, the RX Racing with Umaid Al-Masood and Stephen Kane will be back for a full run in 2012. So that's very good, but they have been amazing since coming on board. Next up, we'll turn our attention to the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. We'll talk to Timothy Peters when we return to Pit Pass USA, part of the Power Motorsports Series on VoiceAmericaSports.com.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
Sports and medicine go hand in hand. Quite simply, if you aren't up to your game health-wise, you won't be up to your game on the field. That's where Bruce the Sports Doc comes in. Dr. Bruce Grossinger uses his medical training and experience to bring you a link between sports and medicine, from the latest advances and treatments to discussion behind the injuries of the week. Bruce the Sports Doc and his team of guest experts are here each week to lay it on the line in terms that you can understand. Tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Sports Channel. Looking for the best show about horse racing and handicapping? Want to play the ponies? Join us every week for Winning Ponies with John Englehart, racing's regular guy, where you'll go inside and behind the scenes with the top jockeys, trainers, agents, and handicappers in the world of horse racing. This show is the perfect complement to the Winning Ponies handicapping website. Listen for top plays for the weekend and the spot play of the week, and win prizes just for calling in. Winning Ponies with John Englehart is live Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Sports Network.
Are you ready for an old-school, in-your-face discussion of professional, college, and high school football? Tune in for talk on a variety of football-related topics on the program From Under the Helmet with Derek Kennard.
You will hear the week's headlines and straight talk from the hosts and weekly guests that are personal and provocative.
From Under the Helmet is broadcast every Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. That's LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Now, back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry.
It's down to 8 races remaining in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series for 2011. They've got a great points race going on. James Buescher, number one. Johnny Sauter's number two by 12 points back. And the gentleman I'm talking to now He's just 14 points out with those eight races to go, and that's Timothy Peters, who drives for Red Horse Racing. Timothy, welcome, and congrats on a good season so far.
Thank you, Bud. Thanks for having me on, and it's been a crazy season. It's been up and down and full of challenges, but, you know, we're catching ourselves right there in the middle of everything, so hopefully we can capitalize on all of it.
Yeah, with 14-point deficit with eight races to go, plenty of time to get back there and get to the top of the points.
Well, that's very true. But our biggest concern and our goal is to be consistent and maintain from now until Homestead to where we can have a legitimate shot. We can't afford to have any more troubles, and we need to top five at top ten and hopefully win some more from here to Homestead to propel us to the front and hopefully win this thing.
How tough is it racing when I go and look at the standings and I see five, six total wins for drivers, and I go, wait a minute, they've raced – X number of races this year because of the points now, a person that comes over like a Kyle Busch or a Kevin Harvick, they're not running for points, but yet they might wind up first and second. Do you ever get confused out there when you're racing where you are? Or you just look around at the regulars and go, as long as I'm in front of them, I'm okay.
No, I want to beat the guys that come down. Obviously they're good. And, you know, obviously one day I want to race with them in Cup. And if I beat them now, it's going to make our resume look that much better. And we can be them. So we're working very hard on it, and it'll happen.
You've been with Red Horse Racing since back June, I believe, of 2009. How has this team progressed through the last few years? Obviously, well, because you are in championship contention.
You know, when I got that phone call to come over here in June of 2009, it was, you know, it was basically a fairy tale ending to my story. You know, and this is my family, and the team has grown over the years. We've gotten better. We've ran well. You know, this is by far the best 3 years that I've had, period, in the truck series is at Red Horse Racing. And it just comes from, you know, everyone gelling. You know, obviously you're going to have frustrations from time to time, but, you know, that's everywhere you go. It's just who has the least amount and who can get through the adversity the best. And I feel like our team is at that status. Everyone here does a great job, and we have great people. So people make that as well. So we got a good thing going, and it sure would be nice to win this championship, not only for me, but for Tom DeLoach and for everybody here at Red Horse.
Well, obviously, you're doing well. You had that big win at Lucas Oil Raceway. Talk about that. That is always a big weekend when you go out there at the half-mile track out in Claremont.
That was awesome because, you know, since I've been here, we've been able to sail on a pole and win a race every year. You know, this year hasn't been the best of year what I'd like to go for as finishes, but we have been there. And, you know, we sailed on the pole earlier this year at Charlotte, had a good truck, and I kind of jeopardized the equipment and put us behind the wall early with the wrong move off of turn two. So, you're sitting there wondering, when is this win going to come? And, you know, when we spun out at Lucas Oil Raceway, I was like, man, this just adds to the frustration. But, you know, it really played into our favor. We were able to come back to pit road, get four Goodyear Wranglers and make an adjustment. And, you know, we drove from the back and we had a good truck. And to come home in victory lane at Lucas Oil Raceway with the history that you have there at Indianapolis, I mean, everybody wants to win there. And I love good short track racing, and it just was a morale booster, confidence booster, momentum builder. And so far, since that win, we've just been on a roll, so hopefully we can keep it going.
Time with Timothy Peters here on Pit Pass USA drives the number 17 Red Horse Racing machine in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. And Timothy, these last eight races, how do you approach them? Yes, you kind of touched on it. You want to win these races, but the bottom line is you want that championship, and you got to play it smart at times, especially with, again, you're going to have the Kevin Harvicks and the Kyle Busches and other guys that are going to be over there racing. Maybe a Mark Martin shows up, or you never know who's going to be racing in the truck series. Do you have to kind of be aware then of your guys, especially with this going down to the end where you're gaining points on the people you have to be and not say, I got to hang it out to get the win?
Well, you know, those guys come down, you have to do your best to try to beat them, but you have to do it in a smart way. Again, you know, it's going to be hard to beat them because of the experience they have and how many shots they're getting to run in a vehicle that weekend. You know, we want to come in and we want to beat the guys that we have to beat And, you know, if we're beating those guys that we need to beat that in front of us in the points, we're going to be around that top five somewhere, top ten. So as long as we can linger around that and play it smart, and be in striking distance for that win, then hopefully we're in that position and that win will come. But, you just can't afford to do anything kind of crazy to mess up that and, put ourselves in a predicament where we're behind the wall, not completing 100 laps of the race.
Is that tough though in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series to play it smart? Because this, to me, it's wide open racing. It's Saturday night short track racing, even if it's on a big track, because the races are so short. You might only get one or two chances to adjust on the truck, and it's just put it down to the floorboard and go.
That's it. That's what's so great about the Camping World Truck Series is that, you know, it's just like you said. It reminds you being at a Saturday night short track, but at 190 mile an hour, door handle to door handle. The races are short, and, you know, the trucks, you pretty much everywhere you go, especially a mile and a half, you're pretty much wide open every time you hit the racetrack. So, you know, it just puts on a great race for the fans, and you're just glad we can be a part of it.
Timothy, for those who really haven't traced your history in racing, I went back through your bio, and you started in karts and were actually one of those who grabbed a lot of national titles. How did you work from there into the trucks and maybe not into, say, open wheel? We've seen a lot of people go to open wheel from karts.
Well, you know, we're very successful with go-karting from 89 to 94, obviously winning over 200 races and 10 national championships. And there, 94 for Christmas, I was able to get a Legends car. And my dad always liked the NASCAR scene. You know, he always helped. He always was a fan, and he wanted to go that way. My parents helped me with my go-kart and with my Legend car, but then I had to work to get on my own to do the late model deal, and so I found me a late model ride, and from 97 to 2004, I did the late models, winning three consecutive championships and over 40-some races. In 2005, got my big break with Bobby Hamilton, and just the rest has been history, and it's been obviously hard work to get to where I'm at, and it makes you appreciate it a whole lot more.
Yeah, no question. And it's a story that a lot of drivers, we sometimes forget. We think maybe Jimmy Johnson had a silver spoon in his mouth, or Kevin Harvick. They all had to do the same thing, really, maybe in a different way to get where they are today. These are the stories. Go to the short tracks, work your way up. I know South Boston was a big place for you to get a lot of experience and get your name out there, but it is the story, really, of NASCAR.
Absolutely. You know, I feel like that when I was in my prime, in my late model, and feel like we couldn't, you know, we've won everything that we could win. We won the Myrtle Beach race. We won the Martinsville race. At the time, it was the Bailey's 300. We raced a lot at South Boston. We won the championship in 2004 at South Boston, and 02 and 03 at Orange County. And those are the tracks that, like, Elliott Sadler's, Hermie Sadler's, the Burton brothers, they cut their teeth on. So you get a lot of exposure and recognition. So it seemed to pay off, and it's just like the guys that are up there winning Cup championships, they went through the same drill. So it's kind of cool to kind of follow similar in those footsteps.
Timothy, one of the people that I should bring up and talk about a little right now is your crew chief, Butch Hilton. How has that gone with you this year?
It's gone good. You know, there's been a couple of hurdles that we've had to jump over. You know, the tire that Goodyear has brought this year is a great tire, but it doesn't have the grip that we were accustomed to having as of last year. So we've had to go back and kind of not really reinvent the wheel, but go down a different path and try our different setups. So we started that with Iowa back about a month and a half ago, and it's working out well. So looking forward to getting to Chicago. Because our first go-round on the big tracks with this tire was at Michigan, and we finished second. So we're going back to Chicago the same way we were there. Chicago, as far as wheel loads and corner banking, and similar to Nashville. I love Nashville, and we ran well there both races this year. So hopefully we can keep it going and bring us home the top five and stay in this point hunt.
Well, Timothy, I want to congratulate you on what has been an outstanding season so far, and to be only 14 points behind with 8 races to go puts you right in championship contention. I know it's going to be a wild 8-race run all the way down to Homestead Miami Speedway to wrap up the season, but you seem to be on track, and you're right there with everybody, and this is the time, I guess, for you, your best chance to get the title.
Well, I appreciate it, and it's just going to this hard work and dedication that all the guys have here, put out the equipment like we have, and Butch and all the guys working on it. That's what it's going to take to win the championship, and obviously me staying on my game and not doing anything to jeopardize the equipment. And hopefully when we get to Homestead, you know, the good Lord has got a plan, and hopefully we can win this thing. But, you know, we can't hang our head because we've had a heck of a season.
That's Timothy Peters, drives for Red Horse Racing, the number 17 trunk of the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. They're off this weekend, but they're back at it at Chicagoland Speedway, which also will start the chase for the NASCAR Sprint Cup title. Well, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll have a few final comments here on Pit Pass USA, part of the Power Motorsports Series and VoiceAmericaSports.com.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
Spin It with Chuck Foreman has a spin on so much that's going on. It will be hard to fit it all into the promo. We'll talk about the weekend games, what to look forward to, hot topics in the news. Spin It Old School, which gives a back-in-the-day approach from Chuck. A no-spin zone where Chuck gives an unbiased opinion and lets you do the same. Chuck will be taking us around town and around the world with news, happenings, and more. It's football, news, and happenings. Tune in for Spin It with Chuck Foreman, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Follow the Voice America Talk Radio Network on Twitter. We're at Voice America TRN. You'll get the latest fix on what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and general happenings that you should know about at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Now you don't have to miss anything when you're away from your home or office. Just go to twitter.com/VoiceAmericaTRN or follow along with us at Voice America TRN, the Voice America Talk Radio Network. We're on the cutting edge of social media. Can you keep up?
Fantasy sports is where the action really is. Over 40 million people play fantasy sports, but rarely do they get to quiz the experts. Fantasy Insights is the name and the game. Tune in every week as Dish Adams and his guests clue you in on the fantasy football game, what's happening on and off the field, and how it will affect your fantasy team. These experts aren't just beat writers assigned to fantasy football. They live and breathe the game. Tune in to Fantasy Insights with Dish Adams every Thursday afternoon at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Sports.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. That's LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Now back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry.
Welcome back. Well, I started the program by talking a little bit about the Baltimore Grand Prix, the inaugural event that took place this past weekend. And I have got to say again, it was just a fabulous weekend. I know there was a lot of controversy. There was a lot of problems for city people with streets being closed off downtown. Traffic was a mess, so we didn't get on the track till late on Friday as they were still fixing the track. Got to remember they had a hurricane the week before and an earthquake. And that is not unusual for first-time tracks. But the fans were just incredible. They were everywhere. I've been to Long Beach when we ran the Detroit Grand Prix at Belle Isle, even downtown. I've been to races around the world. Probably about the only thing it rivaled with a huge crowd was when the kart used to run at Surface Paradise down in Queensland, Australia. Just huge, huge crowds all day long. They were there from early in the morning to late in the day, and hats off to all the organizers of the Baltimore Grand Prix, and all of us are looking forward to going back there next year. As far as the American Le Mans Series next year, they're still talking about a couple of possibilities of new race venues or old race venues coming on board. We'll have to wait and see. Schedule won't be out for a while. NASCAR, well, Rockingham, The Rock is going to get a race. They're going to get a NASCAR Camping World Trunk Series race in 2012. It's been confirmed that Kentucky Speedway, even with all their traffic problems this year, will get a Sprint Cup race date in 2012. Now, there's a shocker. You know, Bruton Smith would have sued them for a gazillion dollars if he didn't get one. And supposedly they worked out a deal with the state of Kentucky and bought land for more parking. A.J. Allmendinger's been talking about a third possible Richard Petty Motorsports team coming up in 2012. We'll have to wait and see if that happens because money is short. We're already seeing it. We talked about it with Michael Knight early on about UPS cutting back and actually going to college football with Roush Fenway. You got Crown Royal jumping ship, and so Matt Kenseth basically without a sponsor. Aflac may be coming back, and you just look around. A lot of money is leaving auto racing and going to other sports, and it's going to be very, very tough for many of these teams to survive. Grand-Am Rolex Series testing at Indianapolis. Of course, they're going to be running there on the road course next year before the Brickyard 400. And getting a chance to shake down their cars along with the Continental Tire Sports Car Challenge. And I'm going to be very interested to see how many cars or how many fans actually show up when they run that race next year at Indianapolis. I just don't see many people showing up for the race, not saying that maybe people won't watch on TV, but I just cannot see people going there to watch the sports car race on the road course. NASCAR fans don't like watching stock cars at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway because they can't see the whole track. It's almost like a road course. You watch them go by, and then you watch the big screens until they come back. So we'll see what happens there. Would like to thank my guest tonight, Michael Knight, who joined us, Stephen Kane, who we got a hold of across the pond and talked with him, and Timothy Peters. Again, we were supposed to have Will Power, but he got delayed on his planes, and so we will be having him on the show next week as they head to Japan to Motegi, not running on the oval, but the road course, which could help him. He's only 5 points behind Dario Franchitti, and he has been awesome on road courses, and maybe that change will help him out. I'd like to thank you for listening. Remember, you can always drop me an email, LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com, LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Archive shows very simply at PitPassUSA.com or iTunes. And also check us out on YouTube, which is PitPassUSA with Larry Henry. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We will see you next Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, for more PitPassUSA, part of the Power Motorsports Series on VoiceAmericaSports.com.
Do it for this week. Time to get ready for another great week of racing to talk about next time on Pit Pass. Tune in next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, for another fast-paced 200-mile-per-hour edition of Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry on Power Up, your motorsports channel.